Healthcare goes under the microscope.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Congress is back in session, and healthcare reform is at the top of the agenda. The Obama administration has been working to get industry support, and it looks like they're getting some of that. The Washington Post reports this morning three major hospital associations have agreed to chip in for healthcare reform, contributing $155 billion over 10 years. Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. She joins us live. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Stacey.
Good morning. So a couple of weeks ago, Big Pharma said it would help bring down drug costs for seniors. Now the hospital associations say they'll take less Medicare and Medicaid and contribute more to caring for the uninsured. Industry and government working together, that's pretty significant.
Well, the Obama theme here is shared responsibility. Everybody who comes to the table has to bring something, and he's doing a shot across the bow as to what he expects. Hospitals basically were threatened with $200 billion, so at $155 billion over 10 years, they're bringing something to the table, but this is far from being implemented. And we're looking at the drug makers, $80 billion. Again, you know, who knows what this ultimately is going to be there. Even Big Wally, Walmart, says businesses should contribute to health care. Now, that's a real shock right there, since they've never had that theme. So everybody who's coming to the health care table has to bring something, and then the negotiation begins. This is going to be like making sausage.
Well, there's been also a lot of talk of another stimulus package. How are the markets reacting to all of this stimulus?
Well, that's an anxiety part here. Everybody fears the huge amount of government funding that's going in and the need to raise even more debt, which means you're going to have the Treasury busily putting out bills, and that conceivably could be very inflationary in the long run. But the first round of stimulus is having just a modest effect, and it looks as though that we're going to need even more to get the public working again.
And just really fast, earnings season kicks off tomorrow. Things have been kind of quiet on that front. Usually we've heard something by now. What's going on?
Well, basically, it's adjusting the rose-colored glasses here because the projections are looking up. Of course, we don't have GM in the index to kick around anymore, but consumer staples are doing fairly well, and that's where we've been seeing a little guidance on the upside here, technology, telecom. Companies are really quiet on guidance, and how does that work? Well, companies counsel when there's bad news and get expectations lower, but when the news is not as bad as expected, they become very quiet. So there's a surprise on the upside, and maybe they'll even get a pop in the stock.
Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thank you, Julie.
You bet.
And the markets are not looking so good in early trading. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 0.4%. The NASDAQ is down 0.25% this morning. And the S&P 500 down 0.33%. Michael Jackson's memorial service will be held here in downtown L.A. later this morning. 17,500 people got free tickets to attend Jackson's memorial service via an online lottery. Hundreds of thousands more are expected to turn up outside today. That could cost the city of Los Angeles more than $1 million in police overtime alone. But other businesses aren't complaining, as Mitchell Hartman reports.
Fans attending the memorial are expected to pump $2 million into the local economy. That's according to the LA Visitors Bureau. Even those who didn't win tickets will find plenty of Michaelabilia around town to spend money on. LA's Grammy Museum is drawing record crowds to its special Jackson exhibit at $10 a head. Spokeswoman Katie Dunham.
Currently we have four of Michael's jackets. We have the jacket that he wore when he received his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Visitors can take a moonwalking tour of Jackson's Hollywood haunts, and Universal Studios is throwing a huge celebration and souvenir-a-thon at its outdoor mall on Thursday. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Jackson's Thriller remains the best-selling album of all time. It sold more than 50 million copies. Listening to the Morning Report for Tuesday, July 7th at marketplace.org. Everyone's trying to save money in this recession, and low-cost European airline Ryanair is standing up with a new idea. The company says it's met with Boeing on developing a plane with standing room only space for bargain hunting passengers. From London, Christopher Worth has more.
Ryanair says it can cut another 20% off ticket prices by taking out a few aisles and strapping passengers to something like a bar stool. It's not the first wacky cost-saving measure that's come from Ryanair. Earlier this year, CEO Michael O'Leary made headlines by suggesting the airline would start charging to use the bathroom. Howard Wieldon is an analyst with BGC in London. He says O'Leary is all about those headlines.
That's exactly what he wants. It's all about gaining PR. It goes against all safety rules. The thought of people standing or being strapped to a pole or whatever, I mean, it's just beyond comprehension. It really is.
Ryanair says if it's given the go-ahead from air safety officials, it would begin offering standing room on its flights. Even if it is just a publicity stunt, it's not original. Last week, a Chinese airline said it's considering vertical seating. In London, this is Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Federal climate legislation heads to the Senate this week after passing by a razor-thin margin in the House. Several Senate committees kick off public hearings today and tomorrow in what's likely to be an even more contentious debate over the controversial bill. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
Senate passage of a climate change bill will be even tougher because of the Senate rule that allows a minority to block a vote by filibuster. Frank O'Donnell at Clean Air Watch.
Because of the filibuster threat, the bill in the Senate will be no better than the views of the 60th senator, because it may take 60 votes to break a filibuster.
O'Donnell expects intense pressure in the Senate to water down the greenhouse gas reduction targets. There also could be fireworks if senators try to include a trade clause already in the House bill. It imposes tariffs on goods from countries that don't regulate greenhouse gases. Chelsea Henderson Maxwell was a climate advisor to former Senator John Warner of Virginia.
You could end up having a little trade war on the floor of the free traders versus the non-free traders, and it'll add an interesting dynamic to a debate that's really about energy.
The Senate Finance Committee takes up that issue tomorrow. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
The price of oil has fallen in European trading this morning for the fifth day in a row. The cost of U.S. light crude slipped below $64 a barrel. As Stephen Beard reports from London, some analysts say the recent bubble in oil prices may have burst.
Oil has now dropped more than $8 a barrel in less than a week. Today's price is the lowest for more than a month. Doubts about demand for fuel seems to be the main factor. Investors are now fretting about the pace and scale of an economic recovery. And they'd better, says Simon Wardell of IHS Global Insight. He and his team have been calling for a sharp pullback in the price of oil for weeks.
We think the conditions in the economy probably didn't warrant the level of price rise we saw. And we were expecting some form of correction, pushing prices down into the 50s. We're not quite there yet, but some of the momentum's gone out of the oil market for the time being.
Wardell says he expects oil to reach that $50 mark within the next 2 to 3 months. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This week, Microsoft launched a free program that allows homeowners to track and modify their energy consumption down to individual appliances. It's the software giant's entry into what's being called the smart grid. But as utilities across the country rush to computerize the nation's electrical transmission lines, are they also opening the door to cyber attacks? From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The smart grid essentially lays a computer network on top of the existing grid. That way, utilities can seamlessly adjust where electricity goes, even if it's coming from intermittent sources like rooftop solar panels and remote wind farms. It would also allow ratepayers to lower bills by tweaking their power use in real time. The efficiency savings would be huge. But cybersecurity consultant Mike Davis says there's a trade-off.
From a security standpoint, I think it's an immature technology.
Davis's firm, IO Active, designed a test virus that could infiltrate the new digital meters on people's homes, allowing a hacker to cut power to entire neighborhoods, if not cities. James Lewis is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It opens a whole new avenue for interference with power generation and electrical consumption.
Lewis admits the smart grid is a welcome upgrade for the nation's aging electrical network, but he says it has to be done right. That may be hard to do. Utilities across the country are scrambling for a piece of nearly $4 billion in federal stimulus funds for smart grid projects. And the money is available on a first-come, first-served basis.
The issue is that we're sort of caught in an unfortunate choice. We want to build a secure smart grid, but we also want to build it in a hurry, and you can't have both.
Lewis says security has to be built into the smart grid from the beginning, not tacked on as an afterthought.
People are being very careful about how it's going to be implemented.
Annabelle Lee is with the National Institute of Standards and Technology. That's the federal agency in charge of developing security standards for the smart grid. And she says they've learned a lot since the hacker-plagued beginnings of the Internet.
We have now how many years, 20, 30 years of experience of how to address security in large systems like this and large implementations. And so we're taking all of that knowledge and experience and using it and coming up with our requirements for the smart grid.
But the new standards aren't due out until September. And James Lewis worries that's too late. He says with so much money at stake, few utilities and technology companies are willing to wait for all the bugs to be worked out. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Car repossession is on the rise. Last year, car repos jumped 10%. The industry has also seen an increase in violence. In Alabama, there have been 3 shootings involving repo men so far this year. From Birmingham, Alabama, Gigi Duban reports.
Jeff Cash has been a repo man in Birmingham, Alabama for 15 years. Since the recession, he's been a lot busier. On this day, Cash has been working for 38 hours straight. He lives on energy drinks, but he's not complaining.
I mean, it's a bad economy, good for us. We're like the vultures, you know, like crash and burn, and we're over picking our meat and getting our cars and stuff. So,
Cash doesn't need a license to do repo work. He contracts his services out with lenders, but he only gets paid when he delivers the items he's repossessed. Ron Brown is the chairman of Time Finance Adjusters. That's a repossession trade group. He says the recent uptick in repossessions has meant more people wanting a slice of the repo pie, mostly untrained tow truck drivers.
Inexperienced people getting in the business with a perception of what a repo man is compared to, in reality, what a recovery specialist is.
The reality is the profession is becoming more dangerous. Jeff Cash is well aware of the violence that's plagued Alabama repo men in recent months, but he doesn't carry a gun.
You know, you start flashing a gun, and they want to flash their guns, and I'm not all about that. I'm here to make a living, that's it.
Last year, Cash earned $180,000, enough to pay for a radar detector, a laptop, and a GPS system in his tow truck. And he's doing even better this year. But some of that money goes to pay off his sources. Cash just received a tip. One of his informants has spotted a truck Cash wants to locate. For that, Cash pays a finder's fee.
Anywhere from $50 to $500, depends on what the car is.
With the information, Cash pulls into a neighborhood and sees the truck.
There she is.
Arriving at destination on left.
He backs into the driveway, clamps the tires, and lifts it away. Cash heads to the lot where he'll drop off the truck, and he pockets $250. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
If you've noticed a strange new space in your mailbox lately where all those credit card offers used to be, that's because we're getting a lot fewer of them. Equifax says this year banks have issued 38% fewer credit cards. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.